Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said Apfelstrudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube. Nintendo!
Nintendo Voice Chat for the week of May 19th, 2016. I am your host, Jose Otero, and this is IGN's Nintendo Show. Joining me once again is Per Schneider.
Very smooth.
And Brian Altano. Blah, blah. First time in a while since we've been together. And just really quickly, if you want to support Nintendo Voice Chat, you can head on over to YouTube, URL youtube.com/Nintendo Voice Chat. Now, this is one word, even though on NVC, we like to just say NVC. We don't actually have it under NVC. Which I would love to change the name of the show someday, because if you look up NVC on Google, the first result, I think, is a nonviolent communication seminar.
Ooh, that's us.
Yeah.
Technically,
yeah.
This is that too, right?
Yeah. It Play can more games. Be. Another thing that you can do to support NVC is to leave us a review like Bucarez, which I love this review. So this is recent. I'm not going to say how many stars, but it was favorable. As the father of a 14-year-old Nintendo fanatic, I have gained some serious cred thanks to this podcast. My son and his friends are impressed by how much I know regarding upcoming Nintendo Nintendo releases. My secret, of course, is the NVC crew, who keeps me informed on all things Nintendo. As a bonus, I get to learn about games from independent developers, which I absolutely love, but would never have sought out for myself if this team hadn't brought them to my attention. Highly recommended for all Nintendo lovers and believers. Thank you very much for the review. I kind of wish we would do a better job on some of the indie stuff, but still, thank you, Mr.
Buckner. This gave me an idea. We should do like episodes that are total fiction. Just to mess with unsuspecting parents.
Really?
Like where the parents then talk to their kids and they're like, oh yeah, no, there are 4 Mario games coming out for the Wii U. We need to buy a second one.
Isn't that what
you
can
play 8 player and like,
isn't that what they did back in the Mac Hasmasima days?
Basically.
Wait, did you just say his name wrong?
Halo's coming to Nintendo DS.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Well,
that was true.
I know it was true.
Wait, yeah, I guess the prototype did eventually come out. So we have a new segment on the show this from a certain point of view. New segment on the show this week called NX Das Hype.
And
this will be every time that there is NX mention, we will resurrect this segment. So I can't promise it's weekly, can't say it's bi-weekly. It might even be monthly. You never know. But definitely in the near future, there will be more Das Hype.
Is that Spanish?
Coming to you.
No,
I heard from the...
Does it have a J like Jose?
No, it's just Hype. Just like that, one long
that would
thing.
Be CH.
However, our first Das Hype statement comes from Nintendo president Tatsumi Kimishima, who recently said some things about well, this is the president of Nintendo, saying things in the Japanese paper about NX, about this next platform, in answer to a question regarding it, once again saying that line, the NX is neither the successor to the Wii U nor the 3DS. It's a new way of playing games, which I think will have a larger impact than Wii U. But I don't feel it's a pure replacement for Wii U.
Which means not backwards compatible, they're starting over, not motion controlled. We don't know if that means no touchscreen, whatever, but like... We talked about this a little bit last week when you guys weren't here, but I would take a statement like that with a grain of salt because new way to play could mean different from Wii U, different from Wii, different from 3DS, but still similar to something else that's out there.
Maybe that's the admission. It's not a second screen type of system because both Wii U and 3DS are that now. They both incorporate multiple screens to do what they do.
Yeah.
Also, this might even be telling us that the home handheld console hybrid I want to curse, but I can't. May not even exist. Like, this might just be one or the other. And I think I have been the guy who's always been at this table saying, it can't be real.
One or the other, both together, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, so just hypothetically, right, speaking, let's say it is not compatible with the previous two, machines.
Sure.
Right? You can no longer play motion control games or Wii U games on it.
Okay.
Which is kind of breaking with Nintendo's tradition. It's like the N64.
Or
when the GameCube launched.
But by backwards compatible, do you mean like taking a Wii U disc and putting it into
an
NX? No cloud saves, no digital stuff, no virtual console.
You can always emulate or let games run.
But then we have to identify that because backwards compatibility technically is virtual console. Those are digital versions of back catalog games that you can download and play.
What's important to note is that with the GBA, Nintendo transitioned GBA players Game Boy Color players to the GBA, GBA to the DS, DS to the 3DS. You could always put in the last generation's games and they worked. And the same happened with Wii U, Wii, and GameCube. Right?
And it almost happened with Super Nintendo, but at the time Nintendo took the stance this would make the system too expensive, so we did it. They didn't want to have backwards compatibility with the Famicom / NES.
So,
and then from N64 to GameCube, we also didn't get a transition where you were able to plug that cart in. In fact, it wasn't until GameCube to Wii that we had the first time a home console Nintendo system had some form of backwards compatibility.
So I do think part of new way to play means we're gonna restart. Like this is like the GameCube after the N64, the N64 after the Super NES. Like the controller will be different from the last generation. You will not be able to just play the games from the last generation on this machine. I think it means that. But like on your note of it will be neither a 3DS nor a Wii U successor, it won't be a hybrid, but it could still be both. It could be a console that uses, let's say, the cartridge medium rumors are true.
Let's say it is. Yeah,
let's say you get these tiny little cartridges, you put them in the machine, and the machine comes out in March, and you hook it up your TV, and then a year later, or holiday, they release the handheld version of that machine. Different machine with, maybe... displays everything as a, at a lower resolution on a smaller screen, mm-hmm. but uses the same media. You know, like that could happen. That would we just don't know.
That would be cool. I do want to rewind a little bit though before we gloss over that new way to play should not make people jump to the craziest of conclusions that we're back in motion control or we're back in some weird doohickey stuff. I don't care what patent comes out. Like, let them at least put the machine out before you jump to that conclusion. Because I think some people fear that we're back in the Wii days where there was a Wii remote and a nunchuck and a bunch of games that some were really smart at taking advantage of it, and some absolutely were not, especially some from third parties were not.
Yeah.
Let's just let that one go. And I know the internet doesn't like to let certain things go, but I think this is one that folks need to take a little bit, like just ease off. Like, I don't think it's time to really jump to that conclusion.
Like, if Nintendo hadn't said Zelda will come out on NX, you could jump to all sorts of conclusions. Like, oh, games will be streamed. You can only play for 5 minutes. Everything is episodic,
it's
right?
It's going to use a boomerang controller.
Nintendo does crazy stuff. It's got an LCD screen. It's only one color red, right? Like, all of these things. But by saying this Zelda game, which we've seen and we know what it is, it's a 3D game, you know this new machine is not something completely wacky and different, right?
Right.
It doesn't mean that there isn't some weird element and something that we haven't seen before.
Yeah,
or that's a really good point. Yeah. At the very least, it's powerful enough to run new Zelda game, so they're not going that backwards. Yeah. And it's going to have the capability to interact with all the things in that world that you're going to need buttons for or some sort of input.
What do you think new way to play means? It's so weird.
Telepathy.
I don't really know. Like, I'll say that I'm guilty of sort of being a little hesitant when I heard that. I mean, the gut reaction when you hear that quote is like, now what? You know? But this is also coming from the guys that told us that,
behind your head.
But I remember we all laughed when we saw the Nintendo DS for the first time. People put up pictures of the Game & Watch. Oh, this is so dumb. Why would you ever need two screens? Now I can't. I have a Vita and I love it, but there are times where I'm like, I'm going through the menus on that and I'm like, I wish I had a map down here. And that's the other weird thing is that like they've made so many games that hinge on touchscreen, dual screen. I think touchscreen a little, they feel like they've been kind of backing away from it a little bit in the last few years. Mm-hmm. You know, it pops up here and there, but, I think Kid Icarus was one of the last ones where they were like straight up like, you have to play this game like this.
Or maybe when you get to the portable version of this venture, it is a touchscreen enabled device, but it is one screen. Because I don't think at the end of the day, if I'm making like a Mario Maker stage, like let's look at software that you know is going to get a follow-up, right? Yeah. Mario Maker was a great thing. And that's a system, that's a game that in my opinion does not work as elegantly with just a normal controller other system. No. You need something that's touch focused.
Which is actually a good counterpoint to the point I just made, which is like, I feel like they're backing away from touch
stuff.
Yeah,
no, I think certain things
they actually kind of made one of the best ones yet with that. Yeah.
But
they have, I mean, if you looked at Microsoft's strategy, right, like there was the ability to connect an iPad to your Xbox. They didn't do much with it, and ultimately people thought it was too fussy. But there was that concept that, hey, when you need that functionality, everyone already has one of these devices. And so Nintendo could conceivably say, you know what? There will be applications where you can use your smartphone to do something, or your iPad, or if this handheld has a touchscreen.
Right? A few more quotes from Kimi Shimiya.
Give me the mic and I'll take it away.
That's it. By releasing in March 2017, the question was asked to him, you're missing the year-end sales, which we talked about on the show before. Mm-hmm. He says it's for the purpose, once again, of our game development schedule. When people finish the launch titles, Brian, the one things to buy in the spring, he talked to you, on summer break and at Christmas. Mm-hmm. As such, it's not simply a question of when the hardware is ready. We need to ensure our software lineup is also in a good place. I say the Kimi Shimiya because I love him. Like, I just wanted to put that out there.
You can't make an Old Dirty Bastard or Wu-Tang reference to me without me just collapsing in laughter.
It was a good one. Yeah, I'm surprised it hasn't been done more often.
Mm-hmm. No, but do you remember a couple years, I think, I want to say it was during the GameCube era, things were kind of getting a little quiet by the end. I think Reggie was just like, well, summer's a good time to go outside and enjoy the beautiful summer air. And I was like, no. Give me the option at least to stay inside. Yeah. I know it's wonderful outside. Thank you for telling me that. But
your guys' job is to keep me inside.
Exactly.
Stop it.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, but like, no, it leans to, hey, we've learned a lot. Wii U, obviously, we had way too many software gaps. Like, that's what that says to me. And there have been other systems.
Come on, let's call it. That's a stupid excuse. You stop. Ain't ready. Let's not say you're helping the poor people who don't have anything to play much. Otherwise, I could still play the games you released in November.
No, but
it's understandable too. Like, look, if the software is not ready, you're not going to release a new piece of hardware without a show horse, right? And it has happened in the past.
Like,
consoles have launched with less than stellar lineups, but there was always like this big powerhouse to look forward to.
Yeah, I mean, what was the big Wii U launch game? Was it New Super Mario Brothers?
It was
that in Nintendo Land. At least at launch, Nintendo published, I want to say Nintendo published three or four games, because they published Ninja Gaiden 3. Mm-hmm. Nintendo paid for that. That was a Nintendo of America published game, or a Nintendo published game. Then it was New Super Mario Bros. Wii, Nintendo Land, and that might be it. Sorry if we're missing
some. But there wasn't a monster game. Just like PlayStation 3 did not launch with, you know, Uncharted or something.
No.
And the killer app at launch, that's missed plenty of consoles. Nintendo is no stranger to that.
They had Knack and Killzone and
Killzone.
Like
that's it. That's an old Chris Boyer joke. I can't take credit for that. Sorry. I mean, it's the truth.
Speaking of Italy,
he's
relating to you now, man.
No, but
great.
Something you just said triggered something in my head that I wanted to say.
Pizza names, obviously.
No, it was before I made that joke.
Summer games?
No, not summer games.
Wii Sports.
Going outside?
I got it.
Welcome.
No, when you said Wii Sports, I'm there. We can stop now. Okay. When Nintendo unveiled that console, so I went back and watched that video again, that E3 2012, and the thing that stood out most is that whole presentation did two things. It said the word new controller more times than ever should have been said. It never said new system, new hardware, the next Nintendo console. It was always, do this with the new controller. Mm-hmm. Check your weight with the new controller. New ways to play with the new controller. And then secondly, everything they showed in that thing was a major success on Wii. So New Super Mario Brothers Wii U.
Yeah.
The Wii Fit brief thing. The Wii Sports where they hit the golf out of the park that everyone oohed and aahed over. So I think they basically, when they presented that last box, they mostly leaned on the last system success, and that's where they tried to make that appeal to both markets. I don't know if that's been
said,
but I just realized
that. Which is interesting looking back, because it wasn't really a new controller. It was a game
for
them.
For Nintendo, right? It's like, hey, you know what the Wii was, now here's a new way to play Wii U. And that caused plenty of confusion too.
True,
right?
I mean,
that was mainstream said Nintendo's releasing a new controller for the Wii.
But it was the bottom half of a DS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the Wii Remote was a new controller.
It hadn't been done in your living room that way. You know, it's the bottom half of a DS, but were you ever playing games that way? I would say
you couldn't turn off the TV and still play
But that was like additional functionality added to a pre-existing concept, I would say. You know, and I look back on the Wii U, that's the off-screen play is the thing I'll remember the most fondly, because I love that stuff. Yeah,
that's
awesome.
A great point.
You know,
that's a very good point.
Wii U's working title was what? Like Project Cafe. And which is odd, because like they must have known early on that they wanted to continue to the Wii brand, and with, you know, I almost wish they had kept like the, you know, Wii 2 code name or something for it, but I think with this one, I think with NX really means the Wii brand is gone. I feel like, you know, we're moving on. It's going to be a new machine and a new generation,
which I like, because if you think about, they had the Game Boy line for decades, and then they were like, it's the DS, and all of a sudden,
the
Game Man, it grew up, and all of a sudden things changed, and it ushered in this brand new era of software and new ways to play, and kind of a new ideology for Nintendo in general, and also the end of game thematic sexism of saying that the system can only be for boys,
which definitely doesn't crack out, because I totally want a Game Man now.
A Game Man?
Yeah. A Game Man? All right, somebody make that.
It's a Game Man, and boy.
It's meat.
Bacon next, color.
There we go. Next up on the list then is that Nintendo took another step into the entertainment realm. So already folks should know Nintendo as a company that is world renowned for its games, right? As a game manufacturer, they previously dabbled in the movie business, but the model was to license a character to filmmakers in exchange for basically royalties. However, that is now changing, as Nintendo is aiming to make filmmaking a potential standalone business.
Right.
So in an interview, a same interview where the most recent NX quote came from, so this is the Asahi Shimbun, which is a daily Japanese newspaper, for those who don't know that, he confirmed plans to basically make and produce feature films and do as much as they can themselves, which to me is both a good and bad thing, because, like, how many irons do you have going right now? Like, yeah. It just seems like a lot. It seems like too much. Lastly, before we jump in on this, is that he didn't give a specific time frame for when the company plans to release that first film. Instead, he just said the first title won't be this year, but it also isn't going to take them 5 years. So here we are.
Ubisoft, yeah. Microsoft, Activision, you know, obviously Sony's been making movies for a while, but all three have launched these initiatives in the past years to try and take some of their game IPs and turn them into movies.
To like varying degrees
Prince
of success.
Prince of Persia was decent, but it wasn't a success. Ubisoft has been very vocal about, you know, investing in animation too, right? Yeah. Like the stuff they use in Rain Man, they also use in other animations.
Yeah. Did you say Rain Man?
Rain Man.
Yeah. Really did.
Yeah, definitely.
No, but let's not overlook that Nintendo is a company that, like, again, the IP is recognized around the world, but they have dabbled in this more recently and in the past as well. So more recently, Star Fox Zero Battle Begins is a short. Yeah. The Pikmin short films are another example. But years ago, in Japan only, there was F-Zero, Animal Crossing, and Super Mario had a film, or either a film or a limited series run.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that didn't see a global release. To me, go ahead.
Because the age of television and movies back then is over. You know, like, now you can work with Netflix and you can work with Hulu and you can work with, you know, all these different the cable channels to produce original content, and now we've seen that it's good. And I think that's not lost on Nintendo.
Sure.
Like, you're seeing what is happening with Marvel on Netflix. That's got to turn heads in Japan, with Nintendo saying, like, hey, you don't have to work with the old studio system. Yep. You can work with an international publisher and make good content.
And I'm glad you said that, but we are talking about Nintendo, who in the late 90s and early 2000s, now this was the period commonly associated as the anime boom, where anything that was Japanimation, took off or sold really well. And so publishers were just jumping at every chance to put something out. Nintendo helped because they don't own, helped launch the Pokemon TV series.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that was the best example of a television show adaptation for a major game. I mean, it still runs for the most part today.
Why do you think they didn't take the next step to, you know, blow up some other franchise? I mean, Fire Emblem.
That's what I don't know. Help me understand that.
And I do think that's because of the lack of distribution of that type of content. You know, like, a Fire Emblem anime back then would not have been a globally watched show.
No.
It is an older audience that will find a viewership in Japan, but at the time there was no Crunchyroll, right? Like, it would not have been a success externally, and I think that's changing. Netflix got a freaking Voltron movie.
And I was about to say, I really like that idea as well, of heading towards Netflix, because right now that market is still kind of young, and especially in stuff like original animation on Netflix, there's not a lot going on. When Nintendo goes into movie theaters, they go head to head with things like Disney. And let's look at the Ratchet and Clank movie, right? Came out a few weeks ago, 15% on Rotten Tomato. It lost $10 million because it had the unmitigated gall of going head to head against Zootopia and The Jungle Book at the exact same time.
Yeah.
Both titans on either side of Disney's stable. And that's the kind of thing that Nintendo would have to go head to head with. And now a lot of that was because the marketing campaign was terrible. The script wasn't great. The reviews aren't great.
The game was 10 times better.
The game's 10 times better. Yeah. And the game's selling well and doing well. But I think Nintendo needs to start with a good idea for something. And I've been for decades racking my brain on, like, how do you make that Super Mario Brothers movie? We know how you don't make it.
Yeah.
But how do you make it? Like, I mean, and then where does it go from there?
You raise an interesting point, and it is true that Hollywood does not have the best track record in the world when it comes to adaptations to video games. A comic book adaptation, for whatever reason, the opposite has happened, right? Everyone is, for the most part, on board with anything that Marvel announces.
Yeah.
DC, not so much, but that's because their stuff's not really together.
Well, they know it.
Yeah.
But why didn't they spin out something like a Mushroom Kingdom animated show for kids, right? Like, featuring Toad and
Friends. My thing, too, is they've always had creative control. control. Although there was the instance with Microsoft where Microsoft wanted just to force a Halo movie into existence.
Yeah.
And Hollywood and all the major studios said, no thanks.
Yeah.
Like, if this is how you're going to approach it and you're not going to help fund it in a way that makes sense for our business, I don't care how hot your IP is, we're not going to touch it.
And live action is a different story. When IGN was owned by Fox, right, we were, back in the days, we're owned by Ziff Davis now, but we were approached a lot by Fox saying, hey, what are the big video game IPs that we should pursue to turn into movies?
Yeah.
And, like, you know, we gave them advice on what we thought would make good movies and what
did
is available
of them happen?
And not. No, because they always, like, checking in with, you know, folks like Peter Chernin, and it always came back saying, like, man, BioShock sure looks awesome, but that is a $200 million movie to do that right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're not going to make that money because, like, gamers are very, very fickle when it comes to the theatrical adaptations. Very difficult to make that work economically. And that's kind of like the realization is, like, video games are awesome. You know, like, the stories are not always rich, but the universes are rich, but it's so expensive to do them live action. But animation and Nintendo, like, I always felt like there's just so much there.
Yeah.
Like, a Legend of Zelda animated series could have been very cool. Well, Pikmin. Just think of these.
Well, there's an Angry Birds movie coming out this weekend. It's already made millions of dollars overseas.
Another one.
No, I mean, this is the first one.
Oh, is this the first one?
I mean, we've heard about it for a while. I'm already over that franchise. Yeah. I've been over it.
I think everyone is.
Yeah. Well, it's probably a few years too late, but you know what? It's already cleaning up in China and overseas, and I think it's going to
China.
I think it's going to do pretty well over here too. So, they just have to find, and I think that's a good way of looking at it, right? Like, Angry Birds is like this kind of whimsical 2D franchise. It doesn't have really a ton of stuff going for it. It's reached different places in terms of, like, it's become a kart racer and an action game and RPG and stuff like that. And now it's this, like, beautiful, robust 3D movie with a great voice acting cast. Mm-hmm. And if Nintendo can find a way to translate something like Mario.
Animal Crossing
is a great idea. I watched Zootopia the other day.
Yeah.
Right? Fantastic film.
Yeah.
Like, figure out a way to do something like that with your characters and throw it out there.
And hopefully this means they're doing it, right? Like, I do think they were burned after the Mario live action movie.
Oh, it's funny you say that. Right? All right, let's drop it. So part of this, apparently Kimishima dropped a quote that the 1993 Mario film was a particular reason why the company was leaning towards anime type content, where Nintendo should produce as much by itself as possible rather than do something live action. Personally, I think you need to let that one go. Like, learn from what happened, right? That was 1993. That was potentially 26 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot has changed since then in live action.
And you can
say, like, to the opposite, right? Maybe Mario is not the best live action choice. I'm not arguing that. But I'm saying some properties may, in fact, make sense as live action.
No.
And I would hate to see Nintendo just dismiss it.
That movie in particular had some very fascinating, like, flubs on
it's
set.
It's such a weird movie.
It's a very weird movie. You had actors who were storming off. You had this husband and wife director duo who were basically, it was their first time doing anything, and they were working with high profile talent and just totally screwing things
up. Hopper, notoriously.
Yeah.
Wonderful to work with.
Yeah, I mean, you get a stable of a very talented people who are difficult to work with, and first-timer people, and weird budgets, and no story. All of that stuff goes out of the window in an animated movie.
Mechanical boots.
Yeah. An animated movie is so pre-produced and so planned. Yeah.
an actual fungus.
You can bring in, I mean, think about, you don't just cut scenes in an animated movie, because they cost $200 million to make. And you don't just cut characters and stuff like that, because it's not just like shooting around them.
But animated movies have changed too, although I guess we're not authorities there, but I don't know. This isn't the anime boom. And I was just really surprised when I thought about this long term. I'm like, how did Nintendo resist the temptation, especially during the anime boom, when anything and everything was super hot at that time?
But animated movies are making tons of money right now.
Yeah.
I would argue more than ever.
You're talking about Japan animation, right?
Yeah.
Anime.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that was, they were 100% focused on making games out of their IP, and they identified as a game company, right? And, like, I'm sure they had a corporate mantra where they said, we are about games. We're making fun experiences for you. And I think things changed over the years. And I think there was this realization for Nintendo, like, how much Their sprites have become cultural icons.
Yeah.
The freaking mushroom, right? Like, everybody sold T-shirts with Nintendo's emblems on them
without Nintendo
seeing a cut. And I think at that point they were becoming more serious about making character goods.
Don't you think that, like, a Pixar style Star Fox movie or, you know, Big Hero 6 style Star Fox movie or a Zootopia style Animal Crossing movie or a Wreck-It Ralph style Mario Brothers movie would clean up right now if,
no,
it, if
I,
it was
I think
done
it would
right.
actually do really well. Yeah. No, no, I'm not, I would not argue against that.
I think there's a difference between that and like the, and I know about the anime boom and all that because yeah. I was totally into it then.
Yeah,
and
I
actually
so,
kind
so
of phased away too.
Yeah, I know.
But I just got burnt out.
Yeah, I grew up. No, but I have said on this show that if there's one game company that is the most Disney, it is Nintendo. Yeah. And, you know, you guys remember when I came back from Disneyland, I was like, why isn't Nintendo doing this? Mm-hmm. And then somewhere along the line that happened. But I hope as this continues and we see them take further steps, more steps into the entertainment business, I'm not all doom and gloom on their games business. I just hope that they understand how long some of this stuff needs to take because I feel like, okay, so the next movie isn't going to be this year and it isn't going to be in 5 years, but what is it? My heart wants me to think it's Zelda. You have a Zelda game coming out in a year plus, and if you are working on some sort of promotional thing, that could help, right? Having a cool Zelda tie-in film to launch around the time of a high-profile Zelda game. Now, of course, this is speculation, never heard a thing from anyone that don't even know, and the people who I talk to probably wouldn't even know this.
Well, there was a Netflix rumor, right, about a show on Netflix.
But that was live action. We're not doing live action after the Super Mario movie.
Yeah, I mean, that might be Purple Monkey Dishwasher. Maybe there's a kernel of truth. Like, I do believe that Nintendo has talked to Netflix about a Zelda adaptation, but, you know, it sounds more likely that it's an animated series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay we'll with that, but I have a feeling it's going to mimic their mobile output, where it's going to not going to be what we expect in the first one. Like, they'll do something that's kind of like...
Sprite-based.
Yeah, I mean, I would love that. Mm-hmm. But if they did something that was kind of, like, safe to begin with and then ramped up to something bigger, I would like that. And you mentioned Marvel before in DC. I mean, if there was... I don't want a cinematic universe of these things, because that doesn't entirely make sense. But I do like the idea of these things sort of working in synchronicity. And I like the Pixar-style approach where maybe you put a 6-minute Kirby cartoon before the 90-minute Animal Crossing movie.
Just
you know?
Don't keep me after the credits to show me anything, because I'm so over that.
Yeah, really?
So
over
that.
It only happens with Marvel movies.
There's a site you can look up to see if you should even bother staying.
I love how it's grown into that kind of culture.
I was pumped when I read that for Batman vs. Superman so I could get the hell out of there without having to wait another 20 minutes.
I always look up Stinger, movie title, yes, no, and of course, that definitely helps. But I think this is good news. It sounds like the wounds of the past are healing because little Fox thing, they asked about Zelda and the answer was, after Mario Brothers, the movie, Mr. Miyamoto is not really interested in to talk about Mario or Zelda or anything.
Yeah.
And there was the Metroid product, strangely enough, right? The team that worked on the,
Was there a John Woo film?
Worked on the Ratchet and Clank movie was also involved with the John Woo production of Metroid.
Okay.
Yeah.
To backtrack real quick, that quote about them doing a lot of it in-house is the one part that worries me a little bit, especially when it comes to something like a Mario Brothers movie, because I can't think of a single cutscene in a 3D Mario game where I've been like, man, I wish that was 90 minutes.
Well, no, and I
look at Fire Emblem.
Or look at Smash Brothers.
Beautifully done.
Like, they didn't write it. Like, they hired someone for Fire Emblem.
It still happened in-house.
No, they can hire someone. No, but to Brian's point, like, Nintendo's strong point in their games has never been, and Zelda's the exception. It's mostly save the princess, Toadette, save Toad or what have you.
Yeah.
It's objectives. It's not a plot. It's not story arcs. It's not characters growing and changing, except in the case of Fire Emblem, which more recently was written by someone else, but still someone who knew what they were doing clearly.
Yeah. But you can play that tongue-in-cheek, too, that it's like every episode the princess gets stolen, you got to figure it out, but you also present that she can get out of trouble by herself. She just chooses this life.
If you look at the less archetypal Pixar movies, I think that the really successful ones are the ones that aren't so much. I mean, Finding Nemo is kind of a Save the Prince story, right?
Yeah.
But Ratatouille isn't, you know, and Wall-E isn't, you know, and... The Good Dinosaur was kind of whatever.
I didn't see that.
Inside Out is just all kind of, it's like Star Trek meets your brain.
Right. Like, I mean, Pixar has a very non-traditional story. But like, if you think about Star Wars, right, it is rescue someone, or like there's the old concept of the take it and bring it somewhere story, right?
Yeah. Lord of the Rings.
Take the ring, throw it in the volcano, and it's like, that works if the dressing is amazing.
Yeah. Which is basically what Force Awakens is with the lightsaber.
Yeah, that's right. And it's exactly take it and bring it somewhere. And like, with the Mario games games always work. I still think you can adapt a very simple storyline and turn it into something really interesting.
Well, yeah. We'll see. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about the mashup pack for Mario, some Mario Maker Worldwide sales milestones, a Yo-Kai Watch 2, and some question block. More when we return. Welcome back. Jose Otero here with Per Schneider and Brian Altano trying to hold on to his water and doing a pretty good job. And speaking of water, there is a... I don't even know where I was going with this.
I can't hold my water now. I don't know what's going on
Super Mario Mashup Pack has plenty of water. It also has plenty of landmass. It also has plenty of Mario fan service, and it's out. It's out this week. Have you guys gotten a chance to look at or play with this?
This is for
thing?
Minecraft.
This is for the Minecraft.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have to confess. I have to download the Wii U version at home because I already have that damn game on so many platforms. Mm-hmm.
I have the Minecraft. Wii U.
I think
Wii
that's
U version
a problem for a lot of people. Yeah.
Huh? I have the Wii U version at home. Yeah. So I'm really excited to see this. I will say that when I first
cheap.
So on the low, I've kind of known about this for a few months, but I couldn't say anything, which is like the weird part of the job. Mm-hmm. But when I first saw screenshots of it, I was like, oh. It's just like those stupid skin packs they put, the Star Wars ones and everything.
Oh,
like that.
So you didn't see everything else.
And then I dug in and was like, wow, like this is fan service. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
Like they did some really cool stuff here. This is not, if you played Minecraft before, which I have, I'm really big into Minecraft, and you've downloaded those skin packs of like rare characters or Halo characters or Star Wars characters, and you went in thinking this was just like weird blocky QB versions of Mario and Friends, and there are some truly nightmarish ones like Petey Piranha.
Any of the Koopalings, like,
oh,
it's
my
just
God.
Like they're all like preteen version because they're all so tall.
Yeah, they do look like they're like awkward puberty Koopa kids. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, they are.
And if you thought it was just that, man, there is so much stuff in this pack, and it's fantastic. Even like the top down view of what the map looks like now, how it basically looks like this overhead sprite version of Super Mario Brothers 3, where like the map and everything like that.
Yeah,
you can run around Peach's Castle from Mario 64.
Yeah, like, so that's 4J. So 4J Studios is the developer who has ported Minecraft to basically every other console. Mojang handles most of the core development, is my understanding, and 4J works in tandem with them. But 4J, for this project, built an entire world for it, and it's full of every single like cool thing that's happened in Mario in the past 30 years. In a lot of ways, and I wrote this in a preview for us, but if Mario Maker was celebrating 30 years of 2D, like this Minecraft thing, it feels like the after party.
Yeah.
Where everything is 3D, where you see like Peach's Castle from 64, Sunshine, Delfino, just the Delfino Hub Town. You see homages to Super Mario World as well. You see all these 3D, like really clever things. Bowser has his own castle you have to find in the Nether. If you play Minecraft, you know what that means. If you don't, look it up. It is a fantastic bit of fan service, and 4J, like you're basically saying, did a fantastic job with this. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like all the swaps are funny. I mean, like we looked at it earlier, and the wolves are Poochie now, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, and Poochie, and if you spawn wolves near Koopas, Koopas are sheep, Poochie will attack.
Oh,
like
course.
His eyes go red, and he goes straight for it, which is hilarious to watch.
As somebody who's been, you know, on the sidelines of the console wars for so long, it's been such a fun few years to sort of be like, oh, these characters are in Smash Brothers, or this team's working with this team. Like, Microsoft worked with Nintendo on this one. Like, what?
Yeah.
How cool is that? What kind of alternate reality is that? I know, not directly, but
kinda
still.
Maybe not really.
Through money. But still.
They own it.
Yeah. I mean, these logos are going to be on the box together somewhere, and that's pretty cool to think about.
Well, and Nintendo.
It's like Sony's going to make a Nintendo movie.
Yeah.
Right?
So. Yeah.
Oh, well, that was a leaked email. For those who don't know, Avi Arad, the Spider-Man producer, was trying to get a Nintendo Mario movie made back when Sony got hacked. But anyway, let's just come back to the point that, okay, so then, Per, you and I were talking. Let's just explain to folks at home. obviously, this is a free update for the Wii U version of Minecraft, which everyone loves to say this, so it has to be said, is too late, right? This is something that should have happened 5 or 6 years ago, and I think we have to do diligence and say that. It's out now versus something that could have been later. Regardless, it's free. Why isn't right now this pack, skin pack, texture pack, 40 character skins, whatever, available everywhere else? Like, why not put this on PC? Why not put this on your 360 or your Xbox One?
Good
or
question. PS4? Yeah. Well, I mean, it's Nintendo's philosophy is to make sure people know where they can find their games and their brands, right? And they've been notoriously careful with letting their characters off their platforms, and that has loosened with mobile. Right, we talked about this, I think, on the show before. In the past, Nintendo did not like third-party apps or like fan-made apps like a Mii creator on PC online, right? They said, no, the Miis only live on the Wii and on the DS, and like they do not travel to other platforms. And so I think they're just they want to make sure that you know when you hear Mario, you know it's going to be on these Nintendo machines, and they don't want to confuse people into thinking like, I'm going to buy the new Xbox One to play me some Mario, or like hear about a cool Zelda game and think they can get that experience everywhere.
See,
that may lessen though over time.
Well, I hope it does, because I was thinking about the way they handle their own characters in general, and even going back to the launch of the Wii U, we had that game Scribblenauts, right? Yeah. Was it Super Scribblenauts?
Yeah, the one that had
Mario
stuff.
Characters in it. Yeah. And the game was about adjective manipulation of objects. Yeah. And Nintendo put characters in there.
So awesome.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Nintendo put their characters in there, but didn't allow adjective manipulation of their characters.
Big Mario.
Just big and small. Yeah. So you couldn't do like Dead Peach or like, you know, Ghost Luigi or whatever. Yeah. But you could interact with every other object in the game like that. Because they were tense about doing anything too strange with their characters. Fast forward to 2016, you have these nightmare teenage mutant ninja
Koopalings
and like these blocky Mario characters. So maybe they're loosening it a little bit. But well, I do think that I do think that it's free advertising for them to put those skins everywhere else, because millions of people are playing Minecraft, and they will ultimately know where they can find Mario, and that's on a Nintendo platform.
So I think if Minecraft was only PC and Wii U, it would have happened that they had a skin pack for Mario on the PC version, then said, hey, if you buy the Wii U Minecraft, you'll get all this other stuff on top of it. But right now, with the distribution between those platforms, I could not see them make that.
So why not at the very least make it available on PC then? It's a free commercial. It's free advertising.
They're just not going to bother. I think part of the deal with Mojang to finally bring Minecraft to Wii U was to say, hey, and you guys get to leverage our IP to sell this game with a free update.
Yeah,
I think that was part of the deal.
Key thing, that's one of possibly several. I mean, Zelda in Minecraft.
Yeah,
that would make so much sense.
It sounds like
a
lot of work.
Too
all this
much
stuff.
Sense. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Perfect. Yeah, it's awesome. You could do Metroid. You could do Zelda. Of course, you can.
Yeah,
you could do really creepy Animal Crossing.
Yeah, the only one that might not Pokemon might not just
Nightmare Teenage
Animal Crossing. All those creatures. It's impossible.
Yeah,
but I also thought though, like Brian, that this would have made sense to sell everywhere else. And they will know where to find that IP, which is back on Nintendo's box. But I do understand it, as you pointed out, that it does make sense to leverage this as a way to just sell Minecraft on your core platform. And who cares if it's too late now?
Yeah.
NX is the real story to me. And when Minecraft comes to NX, which to me, this move says it will.
Of course,
it will have skin packs like this that people will enjoy.
That is one aspect. The other is, do not forget about the late Walmart console, right? Like, when the Wii U is no longer the cool thing that our generation buys or gamers who play a lot, it will be a cheap device people like kids and parents pick up at discount prices at a Walmart. And what better box to sell than the Mario Minecraft box, right?
You think so, though? Because I feel like
you feel like everybody has it?
You would be surprised. Like, even like last year, I'm always mouth agape at around Black Friday deals.
Yeah.
Because you're finding PlayStation 3s and Xbox 360s at just absurdly low prices.
Yeah, but those were infinitely more successful consoles.
Yeah, but I mean, some families just don't have to be on that cutting edge. Like,
yeah, I totally understand that. But,
it makes sense.
I mean, that's Nintendo's entire philosophy with like the $79 2DS. You know,
or even the Wii. What was it? The Wii Mini. Yeah, Wii Mini. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Sorry.
Or the Canadian Wii, whatever it was.
No, it came to the States eventually.
The red one.
Yeah.
That was so weird. That's so weird.
It's like a Wii, but
yeah,
it's really nice.
No, I totally understand that. I don't know if that's going to be the go-to console in a scenario like that. I think the go-to budget console is I think you'll have better options as a family.
Okay.
I just think Minecraft is a strong franchise, and kids, when they see, oh wait, this is a Minecraft version I can't get anywhere else, they could use the power of NAG. To get that thing.
The power of NAG.
Sure. NAG.
All right. Well, just a reminder, Minecraft Wii U Edition is getting a physical version. You can get it digital or physical for $29.99. The update for the Mario Mashup Pack is free. We'll have a Let's Play on MVC Plays, which you can find on youtube.com/Nintendo Voice Chat sometime next week, so make sure you check that out. We talked about what this means for the future, potentially. I did want to make one quick comment on when you were talking about just how when Nintendo did do these partnerships, they were kind of very guarded, and you couldn't do the adjective manipulation, for example.
Yep.
In this version of Minecraft, you can, in fact, use those skins in other worlds. So if you generated a Skyrim world or a Mass Effect world, which are two worlds available on the Wii U edition, basically you could put Wario in Skyrim and
kill
a dragon or something.
That's so cool.
It's still like you're using your imagination more than it actually being a Skyrim meets Nintendo crossover,
sure.
but you know, you got it.
It's a big toy chest, and I like that idea.
Yeah, exactly. So Miguel on Twitter sent me a question. He's a big fan of MVC. He's never played Minecraft, and he's planning on getting a Wii U in the next few months, it sounds. Should I play it on Wii U or just get it on PS4, which I currently have? He says the Nintendo DLC is what has him sort of stuck on the decision.
Sure.
If he's getting a Wii U now, I was really surprised about that. If you already have a PS4, I'd say just go for Minecraft on PS4, unless this is all you really want, is this Mario mashup pack.
Yeah, but
feels a bit expensive.
Think about it, though. If you, let's say you've got enough cash. Let's say you got like $600 to burn, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could pick up a Wii U Mario Maker, Wind Waker HD, Pikmin,
yeah,
Mario Kart, Smash Brothers, yeah. Right? Like, there are all these great games you could pick up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, if that's your approach, yes, you can play an entire generation of awesome games on this machine. You're not going to get a ton of stuff in the future, obviously.
Yeah.
Then it would make sense. But to buy the machine just for Minecraft?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Minecraft Mario?
These skins are icing on the cake.
Yeah.
But the cake is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Like, Minecraft alone, the base game is fantastic. And it's like, I mean, there's a reason it's got such tremendous longevity, and it's become one of the highest selling games of all time. Is because it's
one of the most important games of the last decade.
Yeah, seriously. Because it's such a special, incredible experience. And it's basically two games in one. The creation mode and the survival mode are such completely different experiences on their own, I would say.
The one thing for the PS4 version is, I found, like, the way I played Minecraft was only with friends or family, and we collaborated and built things together and messed each other up.
Yeah.
And like, I felt that voice chat was crucial.
Sure.
And so with Minecraft on the Wii U, like, you gotta phone a friend. That's okay. You can Skype someone, but you still need to set it up more. It's not as turnkey.
I'm pretty sure that microphone on the controller
works.
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, you know what?
Yeah.
I've only played it with the two-player mode so far.
Yeah. We should actually get on tonight. You and
we should
try
that.
I'm just gonna blow up your Peach's castle.
I believe. I'm almost positive that the draw distance in the PS4 version is significantly better too.
Yeah, it does.
Xbox One, same or
I think it's the same. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But so that's cool. in a game like that, it's not big of a deal.
You're not there for the graphics.
It is in creative mode when you're flying up in the sky.
No, you're not there for the graphics, but it is pretty nice to like look up over a giant forest that you can see and not hit that Turok 64 level of fog halfway in. You know,
no good that's point. Fair.
But
that's
either
fair
way, you guys are right. You
all know, right. Good one. So moving forward, last couple bits of news. We'll go through these quick so we could get to some real questions. Number one is that Mario Maker passed 3.5 million. I'm not sure if that's shipped or sold.
Oh, copies.
I'm assuming it's shipped, but it may mean sold. And another fun stat, 7.2 million courses have been created by the user base.
3.5 million shipped?
3.5 million.
How many Wii U's were sold?
12 million.
That's insane.
Yeah, the attach rate's pretty good.
Wow.
Yeah, it's looking pretty solid for them. And it'll only continue. Well, hopefully the people who haven't bought it will continue to. I mean, you'll have to see, but Still, the best attach rate is Mario Kart 8, like, yeah. No question. Even Splatoon actually did a little better than Mario Maker in terms of that attach rate, I believe. Mm-hmm. I think they hit 4 million.
Wow.
Anyway, Nintendo, though, 7.2 million courses created. This hasn't been the most steady cruise ship of community management. Like, there have been some mistakes, but also some corrections on Nintendo's side. They have been getting better at communicating why levels get deleted, whereas there was, you know, this has been a learning process, I think, for them, too. But regardless, that's a really cool milestone. And then the second bit of news is that Yo-Kai Watch 2 is going to release on September 30th. Now, I think when Yo-Kai Watch first got announced, we speculated on this show, are they going to hit the gas to get 2 out so that they can put 3 out globally? I think this might be a signal, yes, and if not, within a year of 3 coming out in Japan, it'll come out here.
Yeah.
So release September 30th includes new areas, over 100 new yokai, new yokai watch. You can travel back in time. Comes in 2 flavors like Pokemon. So there's Yokai Watch 2 Bony Spirits and Yokai Watch 2 Fleshy Souls.
These titles are – there's something wrong
Bony
with these
Spirits
titles.
And Fleshy Souls?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's all I'll say. It's just there's something ain't right. Yeah.
So Yo-Kai Watch was an interesting launch where, you know, I think Nintendo was hoping that they create a second Pokemon.
Yes.
And, you know, and so it didn't, far, and like, was there an animated show as well?
So the show did happen. It was on Disney, and I think now it's on the internet. It's easier to access. The show's actually very good. Mm-hmm. I've watched some of it, and I have a very low stomach for a lot of kitty-based stuff, but I thought it was written in a mature way. It follows that Pokemon type of format where it fits very well into the world and it follows the game closely enough, and it's very contemporary. Like, the people who wrote it, I think they did a really good job of adapting it.
But it didn't work, right? Like Viva Piñata, it was a cool idea, but it didn't get to a mass audience.
It doesn't seem to have taken off in a huge way. If it did, I think Nintendo or even Level 5 would have said something. Level 5 did say over the summer that Yo-Kai Watch as a franchise hit a significant milestone. But it didn't sound like the U.S. launch had anything to do with that. Now, in Europe, this thing just came out fairly recently, I want to say, if not within the last month. Who knows if there's a better story to tell now?
I think it's cool they continue.
Yeah, no, I'm glad they're continuing. And to me, I think this is just part of a plan to get Yo-Kai Watch 3 out everywhere.
Right.
I think 3, which is set in the U.S., that thing's coming west. Unless 2 really tanks, which I don't know, because no one really knows how well that game's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
No,
it's time for the question block, which is, in case this is your first time watching the show, a timed segment. We take 4 minutes per question. I was inspired by a cool podcast idea I saw a while back. And I know some of you don't like the timer, but you know what? That's not my problem. So.
Anti-timer people?
Yeah, there's anti-timer folks who love to leave comments about it.
What, they don't like the sound of it?
It's the 21st century. Be nice to timers.
Yeah, and we got places to be and things to do. First question comes from good friend of the show, Charlie Gadsden, who says,
Gadsden?
Hi, everyone. I'm curious to know your opinions regarding what Nintendo has achieved by skewing so far and away from what traditional console manufacturers and game publishers seem to be doing. He feels the Wii was an overwhelming success because of its broad appeal. But unfortunately, that attach rate didn't carry over for Wii U. Fast forward a few more years, and Nintendo now does E3 totally different, and even appears to be releasing consoles at a different interval than everyone else. Are they now awkwardly different or uniquely special?
Sure.
And he says, thank you and keep up the great show. So I want to kick it off with, I think that Nintendo has just figured out, like some companies have, that E3 is not the only place you make announcements.
Right.
Even releasing a console, you want those holiday sales, but I don't think just a holiday launch guarantees big time sales. That isn't how Apple operates. Apple will drop an iPad in March and April, and that is very much tech friendly, casual, open audience, like expanded audience stuff.
And Apple doesn't make a big splash at CES, which is the big consumer electronics expo, right? Like they make their own event. So it's like, you know, whatever works for you. Like there's no template that has to be followed to make a product a success. You know, look at Tesla too, right? It's a company that very much operates outside of what everybody else has done. So I actually like that part. I like that they are doing things differently. The question about whether they are you know, they're breaking the cycle, and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, it's like, depends on whether you think, you know, the software and the machines they're releasing will be strong enough to make a huge splash, right?
Like, sure.
Sega famously choked with Saturn and then had a mid-console machine with a Dreamcast, and it didn't work out for that company.
Mm-hmm.
And they did have some powerful brands and titles.
Oh, it's
too.
A very well-remembered machine, yeah. for a lot of its ideas, for a lot of the weirdness it tried to do, but also the quality of the games themselves.
And that was only a core gamer machine, you know?
Yeah, but that machine had impediments like EA saying, we're never going to put a Madden title on this.
You mean
that
like with Wii U?
That thing had an impediment like, hey, Square is not putting an RPG on this thing, and those were the big titles.
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Nintendo's in the same boat, clearly, yeah. But Nintendo has been able to keep that boat afloat,
right.
Whereas Sega could not during the same period.
And that's the big question, Charlie, right? Is like, mid-console launch can work amazingly well if people are like, you know what, I'm ready for something different, and depending on what this machine looks like. If this machine has like the most beautiful looking Zelda or Mario or Metroid game on it, where people who are currently, you know, snapping up Uncharted's and, you know, Call of Duty's and Battlefronts, it will turn their head and say, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I think people are going to invest in it. And I think now mid console generation is a better time than going head to head with a Grand Theft Auto or something like that, you know?
Well, yeah. And let's not forget that even the current companies that have platforms out are all of a sudden potentially refreshing what they're making this year alone. Like, this is not just a Nintendo thing. If anything, that's something that I think by accident sort of happened, because I don't think either of the three companies were trying to react to each other with, we're going to have a new machine in 2016 or some form of new hardware in 2016.
If you're a diehard Nintendo fan, you don't pay attention. Like, Sony is introducing like something called PlayStation Neo, right? It's like the PS4.5. More powerful, you know, it can run certain games at a higher fidelity, right?
Yeah, but just to make it clear, rumors say we don't 100% know for sure that
that's
this
right.
is
the thing. Nobody's officially announced
no any of this.
But I do think
the new 3DS did that too, right? Yeah. Like it's the same kind of concept, only that Sony is a CE company, cares about 4K, and obviously wants to add some of that.
And I think that's what that's our inevitability with the games industry, is moving it towards sort of the more phone-esque model. But I do think that, being at E3 isn't necessarily a prerequisite for success, nor is not being at E3 a damning of failure or whatever it is. Right. I mean, there's so many companies that have no presence whatsoever.
Rockstar
shipped their 65th millionth copy of GTA 5 the other day. Doesn't show up at E3. They don't care. They don't need to be there.
They have to.
They do their own thing.
E3 is whenever they announce that game.
Yeah. E3 is actually, it looks like the biggest thing in the world. It's actually just a small piece of all of it.
Yeah,
so.
And we love E3, to be
fair.
Of course
we do.
We go, it's part of this tradition, which is the, you know, North American video game market.
Mm-hmm.
But times have changed, and we're seeing that more and more.
It feels like a party, and it's like, Nintendo, why aren't you here at the party, you know? So, there
we
it is.
We did it. All right. Yeah. Always. Okay. Wow. All right. Thanks,
Charlie.
That
sounds like it's being played through like a GBA.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it was. next question comes from Ryan, and he asks, what are the chances we will see some sort of 30th anniversary Zelda amiibo at E3? Personally, I would love a Zelda 8-bit set of amiibo, or better yet, a set just based on original Zelda art. It would be fantastic. And he gives different examples. Of course, we will probably see a Zelda Wii U NX set, but considering this E3 is all about Zelda, why hasn't there been more discussions about this possibility at the very least and plant that seed? And if not, he hopes that this show will plant that seed. This show ain't going to plant a thing, because I think that Japan makes the decisions Japan makes, and they don't listen to the show. I think that it may be too early to talk about amiibo and Zelda at E3.
You think so?
Yeah, because
I think they show it.
Wolf Link, well, it has to have a date then. It has to have a...
Why? Because it has to have a usage.
Dude, you want details on the amiibo a year before the game comes out? That makes no sense.
From talking about a Star Fox.
But you want to buy an amiibo that has no use? I mean, you do.
I bought all of them.
I know you do. And I'm the same way. But, I mean, if you're going to put out an amiibo... Like, the Mario Maker thing made sense, right? Because it had...
I only think it might
bet right now. I say there will be a Zelda amiibo.
Can I have cheese on that thing?
I bet in steaks
only. You can have
only.
Cheese on yours.
You let me know when you want to take this thing for real.
No,
but seriously, maybe too soon. I just think it might be too soon. Only you're going into so much information about Zelda,
is
and you can always
assume.
Can I finish?
Okay.
Basically, you can talk about that amiibo any other time. Why would you make a big deal out of that?
Because I got nothing else.
You can make a big deal out of the Wolf Link amiibo, which you already know works with it, and you can say we have other plans for amiibo, but we'll talk about those in the future. Bye, kids.
Mm-hmm. They are only showing Zelda at E3. They're going to make sure that they have all the flavors and colors of Zelda.
But wait, they could. I'm not saying they're not.
Yeah, an amiibo there.
I'm kind of with Jose on this one in that you're not going to release. I mean, maybe they'll show it, but you're not going to be holding it anytime before the day or the week.
Okay, fine. I will not be holding it. I agree with you.
But it's also
going to be in a glass case.
Pear, there are now three different Link amiibos.
Yeah, that's crazy. They're going to have the fourth one at E3.
There's three Link amiibos. There's also a Ganon. There's a Wind Waker ship, Zelda.
Too.
Yeah. You really?
No.
Are there going to be a Wind Waker ship?
There will be eventually.
I'm just trying to think
of... They ran out of stuff to do.
It has to have a functionality.
I'm just trying to think of Nintendo's promotion cycles, right? Like, when we first saw amiibo, it was shown at E3, but they didn't sell it to November, which is probably the longest window of product unveiling to product release. They announced a Kirby set, which was only like 2 months ago.
That's right.
And that's pretty much for sale already in Japan, and it's on its way here within the next month. Just trying to think of other cases. The Smash set's not done. I mean, maybe. I don't have an answer either way on this one. I think it's too soon, but then I also think you got to talk about something. You need something else to talk about.
I feel like, you know, this is the toy division.
Done.
The toy division within Nintendo long time ago said, hey, Zelda guys, we need amiibo functionality. Here are the concepts for the amiibos we're going to release with it. Before anybody dreamt of that game actually slipping another couple of months into the new year.
I would agree that the amiibo's done. But it gives you something to talk about later.
But what does this thing do?
It unlocks.
This is toys to life.
A green hat.
Not just toys. A green hat where?
In the game.
In Mario Maker?
No, in the Zelda game next year.
Is that the game that doesn't even have a release date yet?
You'll get it. You get to look at it and be excited for the game that comes out in March. And then in March you can bring it out and it'll unlock a blue bow
rather than focus
arrow.
On timing, I mean, it's pretty obvious to me. It would be the Link that you've seen in every trailer with that bow and arrow and some awesomely majestic pose.
Or whatever MacGuffin is. Like, you're writing
the... a MacGuffin, for sure.
Yeah, you're riding the magical lizard king or something, and then you'll get the magical...
You're riding... Seven. Riding. What kind of king is that you ride?
he's the...
King
of Flesh. What were the titles of the Yo-Kai Watch games?
Bony Shaft. And
flesh hole. What were the Yo-Kai games called?
That was dangerously close to getting rid of getting us an explicit tag. Take it easy.
But to answer the poor guy's question, we haven't answered any of your questions. Yes, I bet there will be a 30th anniversary Zelda.
I'm not ready to pick a side. It's a 50-50 chance in my book. Mm-hmm. Brian, are you know?
Me and the Lizard King got it done.
Oh, man, I think maybe you'll see a picture of it and you won't be able to hold it until that game is out.
Let me touch it. Remember when we sat in a room with Miyamoto and they were sitting in glass cases and we're like, let us touch
it. Can we open that up?
No,
go away.
You will like it. All right,
what else you got?
We got to go, so we got to get our last question in. Oh man,
this better be good.
This one's too good for.
What?
We're doing it. Fine. All right, so.
Your rules, man.
It is my rules. All right, so.
Lizard King.
This comes from Steven. My question to you is, do you think more asymmetrical multiplayer games could have saved Wii U? He talks about how games like Nintendo Land, Rayman Origins, Affordable Space Adventures, and Pokken Tournament all used the gamepad in a way that he considered fun and unique and was signature in only Wii U. Meanwhile, the biggest AAA games Nintendo put out, Mario Kart 8, Smash 4, Donkey Kong Country, and 3D World, mostly didn't take advantage of it.
Right.
So he's not trying to bash those games. He's just wondering, would that have helped it? Who wants to go first? I could, but Kevin's got to get in here. So Harry.
I think it's because the basic design philosophy of the Wii U was different than the Wii, which was the Wii was bringing people together in a room, and the Wii U was hunched over a thing by yourself.
Yeah.
The Wii
But they wanted it to bring everyone in the room. They wanted the guy with the controller or the girl with the controller to be doing something else.
But they learned with Pac-Man Verse that that didn't work. Like, you just don't have one. There's not one person in the room with the sword. The other four have shields. Everybody wants a sword. You know, look at Wii U. Or look at Wii. Everyone got their own controller, or you passed one around. It made sense. That was good for parties. The Wii U just wasn't able to capitalize on that.
I think the thing more that we got right was that by looking at what was happening in the room, you had more of a desire to want to try it. Whereas if you were looking at the person hunched over the controller, that's the kid you saw everywhere. That was the kid that was the reason most kids, people didn't want to touch the video
game. And by the way, Nintendo Land, when you're playing like Find Me or some of those, what was it called? The Mario,
Chase Mario,
Chase Mario thing. Welcome. Not Find Me, that's older. It was so well done that you had a little camera screen of the person playing Chase Me.
Chase Mario, Chase Me, I don't know.
Like, I thought they did a really good job making the person with a gamepad feel special, but then also encouraging you to pass it along and stuff. So I don't know if that's true, that that was detrimental to
I don't think that from a glance you can tell what the person on the gamepad was doing without being over the person with the gamepad. Shoulder. You basically have to stand there and be like, oh, so that's what's happening. Yeah. Whereas if you watch four people swinging Wii remotes, playing some
tennis,
you're like, I got next, and I'm going to take you to school.
Well, so like, I mean, we're always on our phones all the time, or our tablets, or Kindles, or iPads, or whatever. How often do you go, awesome, can I see that and take that from somebody?
Feels,
this is
personal.
My thing. Yeah. Like, I don't want you in this bubble. And that's the Wii U is designed probably not on purpose, but it sort of haphazardly fell into that situation.
I just want to make sure, though, Steven, I agree with you, though, that the games that you all name dropped, and even Pokken Tournament, which had two different perspectives, depending on which controller you were using, was a smart way to do it. And to think this thing was going to use up to two game pads is also just makes you wonder what games they were cooking around that concept that we are never going to see. For example, you know, was there something that Splatoon would have done differently? Was there something that some of these games could have taken that idea and run with? And I'm not saying some of them even had an idea, but we don't know because Nintendo's so secretive about that stuff.
Yeah.
What could have been designed around two gamepads?
And by the way, I don't think the two gamepad thing ever worked, like, to the point where
you never saw it.
I don't think people looked at the gamepad and TV screen set up and said, oh, you know, there'll be an amazing piece of software where all of this makes sense. It's different from the Wii Mode.
Yeah.
It's different from the DS that has two screens, right? Like, it's like, I don't know. I think people understood what it could do, but it wasn't inherently that exciting.
Right.
Well, that's what I was trying to say with kind of watching the person who was using the gamepad versus watching the people who were swinging Wii remotes. That to me said it all, where you got that expanded audience's attention because they could watch those people and see how much fun they were having.
I mean, I think the more traditional games were the ones that excited a broader audience.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, Mario Kart, I love that. That looks amazing. Why is it so pretty? Right? Like, that is more powerful than, can you believe the different ways you can use it?
Well, I think to answer his question on a very base level, like, more of everything would have helped the Wii U.
Yeah, I think
more of everything. One of the major problems was sitting there and going, I have this thing, and it's going to hold me over for 6 months until the next thing, and then realizing there wasn't a lot in between. Whereas if you look at the life cycle on pretty much everything, every other console right now, or PC or anything like that, is you're constantly jumping from experience to experience, and you're tethered to that thing. And it also becomes your Netflix box. It becomes your Hulu and Amazon. And Amazon Prime and all that
and
stuff.
And let's not even talk about the battery life issue, which was also a big reason why the gamepad wasn't very popular. But you make a great point. No. And we're done. This is Nintendo Voice Chat, which is a show you can catch every week on IGN. We have a YouTube channel you should check out, youtube.com/Nintendo Voice Chat. You can head on over to iTunes, leave us a review. We always love to find those, and we can read them on the show. And lastly, you can leave us feedback by heading on over to and emailing us, actually, at nvc@ign.com. Thank you very much for listening, and we will be back next week with more Nintendo Voice Chat.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new. Or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.